Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
So we're talking with Michael W. Hall of the UFO I-Team. Did you have an interest in these topics growing up?
You know, I did, Johnny. You know, people always usually ask, and this is what we do, too, when we're interviewing our experiencers here from the UFO I-Team, is we will ask them, do you ever have a point in your life where you actually saw something and it kind of turned you on to this subject? Myself, I've just always been interested. For some reason, my entire life, I don't remember a time in my life where I actually saw something that sent me on this path. I'm the kind of guy that always has that kind of thought in the back of my mind anyway, is that, you know, why are we here? What's going on with our even solar system? I was the kid in class as a young guy who just was incredulous when our teacher was actually on the science part of the class and mentioned the fact that the moon didn't spin, mm-hmm. didn't rotate. It just kind of sits there with the same side that we see rotating around the entire planet. I'm going, that's not right.
Yeah.
How can that be?
Yeah.
So it's just something that I always have been interested in. And throughout my career as an attorney, the last 30 years, I've always been just kind of doing pro bono work for different organizations. For instance, Peter Davenport's National UFO Reporting Center. I've been his attorney for the last 23 years. Dr. Richard Haynes, the pilot reporting agency, they call it NARCAP, been their organization's attorney for many years, and just always been interested in trying to help, well, in any way I can. Of course, I was a member of MUFON since the 90s, but always been interested in the field and trying to do my best to get down to the bottom of it.
Speaking of the moon, do you think it's hollow?
I think it must be. And here's the thought that I have, Johnny. The moon is way too big. For some reason, if you look at Jupiter, Saturn, all the different, even Mars, if you look at all these planets and the size of their moons that rotate around their planet, none of them are as large as the moon. I believe the moon, they say, is about the fourth of the size of the Earth. And that's kind of strange that it's actually in the orbit 250,000 miles away from the surface of the Earth, and it's so large, and it's still in orbit. In other words, the orbit has not declined. In a large object like that, with the magnetic forces pulling upon each other, you would assume that the moon would actually at one point wind down and crash into the Earth, but it hasn't. So, and of course, we've all heard those rumors that when they actually sent nuclear weapons to the moon and crashed them on the planet, which is kind of a weird story in itself, the moon just rang like a bell, they said.
Yeah, that's strange. And I always thought it was strange, too, that it doesn't spin like the other moons do and like the planets do. It affects our tides, and there's just too many coincidences to make this whole thing an accident. All of it. Us, the planet,
You got it. You got it. And you were that kid in the class as well, I can tell, who was just saying, wait a minute.
What's up? There's something going on here. I don't see why more people aren't fascinated with just ancient Egypt.
Exactly, which is not that long ago. We have plenty of studies to be able to, kind of open that whole area up. And, of course, there's Zahi Watt in Egypt, who was the local antiquities expert that I think for sure was, you know, a controlled opposition kind of guy, where he's there to keep the lid on things down there. So it's hard to really get down to the bottom of these forbidden archaeology issues.
I was wondering, how did the first pharaoh become pharaoh, or the first leaders become leaders? I mean, did the rest of the people just, let's vote this guy in. He can run things. Does anybody know?
Well, I think they know, but they're not really going to tell you, you know, these kinds of issues. But I believe that, obviously, even with their theology, the Egyptian theology, that these blue blood leaders of their times, pharaohs would actually then, upon death, need to be preserved so they could make the transition on the huge longboats that they actually created and buried with them to the afterlife. You know, that kind of theology is not something you necessarily come up with on your own. And I believe probably, as the legends mentioned, there were visiting gods, aliens, whatever you want to call them, that came down and probably initially just wanted our resources, you know, gold, ore, you know, what kind of lead and copper that they needed for their purposes. And, of course, they used the local indigenous population, Sumeria, Egypt, those kinds of areas, to do whatever their bidding needed to be done to grab the resources. But, of course, at that point, you know, you're talking the human beings are very intent on worshiping those kinds of powerful beings. And I think maybe then they transferred that power as a control mechanism to the pharaohs, to the priests, you know, to the folks that they needed to keep their population in line, of course.
Now, is this like with the New World Order and stuff, or is this something else that I'm not familiar with?
The New World Order, it's the Georgia Guidestones. It's the idea that, well, you know what? It's almost like the original idea of the flood in biblical times.
Ah.
They realized, wait a minute here, something's getting out of control. These people are getting very difficult to deal with. And, of course, back then they had the sons of God coming into the women on earth and creating the Nephilim and all sorts of strange creatures that they needed to wipe out. So the old Agenda 21 and the Illuminati at this point are contemplating the fact that this is really getting out of control. We only need 500 million people to do our work here on this planet. And, of course, they're talking about getting rid of the rest of us with some kind of a population reduction program that's not going to ruin the infrastructure. Let's put it that way.
Hmm.
You know, they're talking electromagnetic pulse that would send us immediately back to the Middle Ages, and or all the viruses that they're putting in, you know, inoculations and those kinds of things. Of course, they've got, you know, the foods, you know, additives and those kinds of things where basically the idea being is that eventually people need to, you know, get to a manageable size, so that whenever the One World Order kicks into gear, they're not going to have the blowback, you know, that they're anticipating. And I think at that point, at least one of these times, Johnny, we're going to have a whole show on the idea of blowback, that once the public is red-pilled enough to realize what's going on, watch out. That's going to be a huge issue for them.
Let's switch gears here, Michael, and talk a little more about the UFOI team.
We've got 10 members right now that have various expertises in different fields of investigation in the ufology field. We've got PhDs, we've got master level, you know, people that have different kinds of training, which is kind of interesting to have in a group like a UFO investigation team. Most of them, by the way, are experiencers themselves, either close encounters or even, and this is not just one or two, we've got abductees in our group as well. So they commiserate with the people out there who tell us their stories, which we are actively recording and getting on tape so we can share them. And we're working on this reality television show about the idea of investigating UFOs. Of course, we just call it the UFOI team.
One of the topics that we cover on the show are conspiracies, so that population piece fits nicely into our theme.
Yeah.
Kennedy, do you think Lee Harvey acted alone?
Of course not. Matter of fact, there's many, many JFK assassination aficionados that say that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't act at all. He was not one of the shooters. Matter of fact, you're going to love this, Johnny. Wait till I tell you this. I meet every Sunday morning with a group of JFK assassination aficionados here in Seattle, Washington, and we have actually the last living mafia asset that was there in Dealey Plaza running a safe house for the mob on the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And the information that he is giving us, and he's written a book, anybody can get it, it's called The Men Who Don't Fit In by Rod McKenzie. Rod McKenzie is about 84 years old now and sharp as a tack. And as a young man, he was charged with running a safe house in Dallas at the time that the Kennedy thing went down. And he says everybody and their brother showed up in Dealey Plaza that entire week leading up to the assassination because and he didn't know why, but all the mob guys were showing up from Chicago, from Florida. The CIA was involved. Supposedly they also got the mob involved in trying to kill Castro, so that was a natural that the CIA supposedly was trying to get the mob involved in doing this Kennedy thing. And his information says that there were probably maybe four or five different shooters. Not all of them were used or hit their mark, but they were just not going to let it go. He was not going to let Kennedy get out of Dealey Plaza for some reason. It's a fascinating subject, and I could talk all day on just that one.
If you didn't mind, maybe we will, because I had some questions, comments. I understand that in all of this, didn't the mafia loan Kennedy's dad a bunch of money or pulled strings or something to help him get the presidency, and then he gets the presidency, and they decide to go after the mafia, and they're not returning the favors, so they're like, hey, we helped you out. You're supposed to help us out back, buddy, and you're not, so we're going to have to axe you out of here.
Bingo.
Okay.
Of course, you know, that was one of the major issues of why people believe that Kennedy was outed. The idea that Joseph Kennedy, John Kennedy's father, was made millions in the illegal not narcotics but the illegal booze trade back in the old days.
Yeah.
You know, alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, to be able to make millions, he had to have mob connections and all those things to make it successful. And indeed, when he got, matter of fact, it was the mob in Chicago that put him over the top to beat Nixon. It was such a close race. People don't realize this back then, that Nixon almost won the presidency back in 1961.
Mm.
But, you know, Kennedy won, and then, of course, the mob is just salivating, going, yes, we got an insider here as the President of the United States. And bingo, his little brother, Robert, starts persecuting the mob. I mean, it was a major deal.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was one of the reasons that I think the CIA got the mob involved. But I don't know if we've got a few minutes here. Let me tell you my bottom line, what I have come up with on why the President of the United States was actually killed. The whole idea of actually killing a President of the United States in the 60s must have been a major decision by someone. It just does not happen without the cooperation of the CIA, the FBI, and all of those players back then, and especially to cover it up this long,
mm-hmm.
of course. But the theory is that the aerospace industry was deeply involved in this whole idea of keeping the alien presence on Earth a secret. Of course, Truman started the MJ-12 organization, which was a group of military and science personnel, to study the idea of what the heck this was that crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. And coincidentally, and that's the same time that the CIA was founded and organized in 1947. So the idea that if they knew this huge secret, the government knew that there were entities on other planets visiting the Earth, they wanted to keep that under wraps at that point. Now, when President Kennedy is elected, one of the things that he does, of course, is start breaking apart the government. I mean, he was so mad at the CIA for pulling off the Bay of Pigs without his authority and botching the whole thing that he says he's going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. And, of course, the CIA is not going to let that happen if they can help it. And, of course, the whole idea of finding out what the heck this happened in Roswell, Kennedy was keenly involved in trying to find out what the presence the issue of these presence of aliens were. As a matter of fact, he started to open up the idea of dealing with Russia in a joint space program, and we were actually going to go to the moon with the Russians together. So at one point, the CIA, along with the aerospace folks, said we can't let this happen. And of course, there's this famous memo from the MJ-12 organization that talks about Lancer inquiring into our affairs, and the situation must be wet. Code kind of talking to the other members of MJ-12, and it wasn't shortly thereafter that, probably a month or so from that memo, that they actually killed Kennedy, which, by the way, was supposed to happen in Chicago a couple months earlier than that. And then it was supposed to happen in Florida, and, of course, finally in Dallas, Texas, where LBJ, you know, is from, the vice president at that time, and LBJ had massive ties to Houston and NASA. They were calling him, when he was the senator, they called him Senator NASA because he was so pro-space. And of course, that's why JPL and all those kind of guys, are kind of, that's why LBJ was so involved with those folks.
In Texas, wasn't former President Bush the head of, the head of the Secret Service or head of the CIA or something at that time, and he was there in Texas when he got shot?
There's not a whole lot of folks that know that detail, that President Bush, who became President Bush later, this is Bush Sr., was photographed in Dealey Plaza on that day that Kennedy was shot. Now, he was not the director of the CIA at that point. This happened later on in his career, that he was appointed to the office of director. But and there's also rumors out there that George Bush Jr. was a young person in the crowd as well, along with his father. And of course, if all the aficionados will tell you that Nixon was there in Dealey Plaza and there for the Pepsi-Cola convention, supposedly, but met with some of the shady characters that were potentially involved in the Kennedy assassination. It's all tied together, and of course, you got to realize that J. Edgar Hoover was the next-door neighbor to LBJ and actually was charged with kind of keeping the lid on things after it was all over.
Man. You know, I could see, like, back then, I could see all these different groups that have this common enemy in President Kennedy coming together, even if they have beefs, they, you know, like, we're not going to, you know, mess with each other because we got to solve this problem. Let's solve it together. We all have this common enemy. What do we do? And then throwing out all their, you have one group saying, well, let's just off him. Okay, well, let's just do this. And then they work together, and man.
Matter of fact, Rod McKenzie, this last living mob asset that I meet with on Sunday mornings, he says that when he was running the safe house, there were these Corsican guys from France that showed up, and they were expert sharpshooters. He mentions, you know, the fact that these guys, he didn't know why the heck they were there. They weren't necessarily U.S. mob, but they were mob from France. So there's all sorts of connections that point to the fact that there was a group of people, maybe even a worldwide kind of organization that was behind this entire event to get rid of Kennedy.
What about his brother? Was it Sirhan Sirhan only, or do you have any, you know, ideas on that?
Oh, no. You know, the forensics on that say that there were multiple, maybe even 20 bullets found in that back kitchen area where Robert Kennedy was shot.
Mm-hmm.
Sirhan by the way, and he claims he doesn't remember a thing of what happens.
How do you not remember?
Well, it's easy to think that if indeed the guy was either MK Ultra'd or he was drugged himself. You know, the patsy. You got to take care of the patsy. So whenever or whatever happens, if he doesn't die during the event, he's not going to know anything. So that's very possible that it happened to him. There is an interesting photograph that was taken by a young photographer that was at the event. He wasn't a news photographer. He was a young guy with a camera who jumped on top of a table and took a bunch of photos as Kennedy was walking by back in the kitchen area there. And he swears, he's still alive himself, he swears there were multiple gunshots from different areas that came into the fray there. He will testify today that there's just Sirhan, this one busboy guy, was not the guy who actually shot at all. Fascinating subject, and it's just scary to think that they can do these kinds of things, whoever they are, with impunity.
Yeah. I've had requests to do a conspiracy conference, like a conspiracy summit.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm wondering if that would be something that maybe your group would want to be involved in, something like that.
Oh, they would, Johnny. There is a member of our UFOI team who is basically one of the world's experts on the JFK assassination. His name is Brian Snoddy. That's Snoddy. And you can find his YouTube seminars on the JFK assassination all over the place. He was one of the most knowledgeable, detail-oriented researchers out there, and he would love to be able to show up at, in an investigation kind of conspiracy theory convention, I'm sure, along with a whole lot of other folks that we have in the local area. And we've got Jim Fetzer, who is involved in this whole idea of conspiracies, you know, as well. And he doesn't just do the JFK assassination. There's Sandy Hook, there's 9/11, there's all sorts of interesting people that are now finally getting the mileage that they deserve after all these years, when people are starting to realize, hey, they haven't told us everything.
So, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. Being the paranormal lawyer here, you came to the right guy. We'll be able to hook you up.
Perfect. Well, how do I contact the UFOI team, contact you, find out more?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking. You can always find the UFOI team, which is a lowercase I, by the way, if you're punching it into YouTube or Facebook. Find a notification every time we go live with our weekly meetings that we do televise as we go. And of course, there's lots of archived material up on the UFOI team Facebook page as well. And if they want to find us on our website, they can go to UFOIT.com.
Thank you for taking the time to be on Strange Harbor once again, sir.
My pleasure, Johnny. Thank you for having me.
Questions, comments, listen to our archived show, all that and more, log on to StrangeHarbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at StrangeHarbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to StrangeHarbor.net and let us know what it is.
So we're talking with Michael W. Hall of the UFOI team. Did you have an interest in these topics growing up?
You know, I did, Johnny. You know, people always usually ask, and this is what we do, too, when we're interviewing our experiencers here from the UFOI team, is we will ask them, do you ever have a point in your life where you actually saw something and it kind of turned you on to this subject? Myself, I've just always been interested. For some reason, my entire life, I don't remember a time in my life where I actually saw something that sent me on this path. I'm the kind of guy that always has that kind of thought in the back of my mind anyway, is that, you know, why are we here? What's going on with our even solar system? I was the kid in class as a young guy who just was incredulous when our little when our teacher was actually on the science part of the class and mentioned the fact that the moon didn't spin, didn't rotate. It just kind of sits there with the same side that we see rotating around the entire planet. I'm going, that's not right.
Yeah.
How can that be?
Yeah.
So it's just something that I always have been interested in, and throughout my career as an attorney the last 30 years, I've always been just kind of doing pro bono work for different organizations. For instance, Peter Davenport's National UFO Reporting Center, I've been his attorney for the last 23 years. Dr. Richard Haynes, the pilot reporting agency, they call it NARCAP, been his their organization's attorney for many years, and just always been interested in trying to help, well, in any way I can. Of course, I was a member of MUFON since the 90s, but always been interested in the field and trying to do my best to get down to the bottom of it.
Speaking of the moon, do you think it's hollow?
I think it must be. And here's the thought that I have, Johnny. The moon is way too big. For some reason, if you look at Jupiter, Saturn, all the different, even Mars, if you look at all these planets and the size of their moons that rotate around their planet, none of them are as large as the moon. I believe the moon, they say, is about the fourth of the size of the Earth. And that's kind of strange that it's actually in the orbit 250,000 miles away from the surface of the Earth, and it's so large. And it's still in orbit. In other words, the orbit has not declined. In a large object like that, with the magnetic forces pulling upon each other, you would assume that the moon would actually at one point wind down and crash into the Earth. But it hasn't. So, and of course, we've all heard those rumors that when they actually sent nuclear weapons to the moon and crashed them on the planet, which is kind of a weird story in itself, the moon just rang like a bell, they said.
Yeah, that's strange. And I always thought it was strange, too, that it doesn't spin like the other moons do and like the planets do. It affects our tides, and there's just too many coincidences to make this whole thing an accident. All of it. Us, the planet, where we're at.
You got it. You got it. And you were that kid in the class as well, I can tell. Who was just saying, wait a minute.
What's up? There's something going on here. I don't see why more people aren't fascinated with just ancient Egypt.
Exactly, which is not that long ago. We have plenty of studies to be able to, you know, kind of open that whole area up. And, of course, there's Zahi Awat in Egypt, who was the local antiquities expert that I think for sure was, you know, a controlled opposition kind of guy, where he's there to keep the lid on things down there. So it's hard to really get down to the bottom of these forbidden archaeology issues.
I was wondering, how did the first pharaoh become pharaoh, or the first leaders become leaders? I mean, did the rest of the people just, oh, okay, let's vote this guy in. He can run things. Does anybody know?
Well, I think they know, but they're not really going to tell you, you know, these kinds of issues. But I believe that obviously even with their theology, the Egyptian theology, that these blue blood leaders of their times, pharaohs, would actually then upon death need to be preserved so they could make the transition on the huge longboats that they actually created and buried with them to the afterlife. You know, that kind of theology is not something you necessarily come up with on your own. And I believe probably, as the legends mention, there were visiting gods, aliens, whatever you want to call them, that came down and probably initially just wanted our resources, you know, gold, ore, you know, what kind of lead and copper that they needed for their purposes. And, of course, they used the local indigenous population, Sumeria, Egypt, those kinds of areas, to do whatever their bidding needed to be done to grab the resources. But, of course, at that point, You know, you're talking the human beings are very intent on worshiping those kinds of powerful beings. And I think maybe then they transferred that power as a control mechanism to the pharaohs, to the priests, you know, to the folks that they needed to keep their population in line, of course.
Now, is this like with the New World Order and stuff, or is this something else that I'm not familiar with?
The New World Order, it's the Georgia Guidestones. It's the idea that, well, you know what? It's almost like the original idea of the flood in biblical times.
Ah.
They realized, wait a minute here, something's getting out of control. These people are getting very difficult to deal with. And, of course, back then they had the sons of God coming into the women on earth and creating the Nephilim and all sorts of strange creatures that they needed to wipe out. So the old Agenda 21 and the Illuminati at this point are contemplating the fact that this is really getting out of control. We only need 500 million people to do our work here on this planet. And, of course, they're talking about getting rid of the rest of us with some kind of a population reduction program that's not going to ruin the infrastructure. Let's put it that way.
Hmm.
You know, they're talking electromagnetic pulse that would send us immediately back to the Middle Ages, and or all the viruses that they're putting in, you know, inoculations and those kinds of things. Of course, they've got, you know, the foods, you know, additives and those kinds of things where basically the idea being is that eventually people need to, you know, get to a manageable size, so that whenever the One World Order kicks into gear, they're not going to have the blowback, you know, that they're anticipating. And I think at that point, at least one of these times, Johnny, we're going to have a whole show on the idea of blowback, that once the public is red-pilled enough to realize what's going on, watch out. That's going to be a huge issue for them.
Let's switch gears here, Michael, and talk a little more about the UFOI team.
We've got 10 members right now that have various expertises in different fields of investigation in the ufology field. We've got PhDs. We've got master level, you know, people that have different kinds of training, which is kind of interesting to have in a group like a UFO investigation team. Most of them, by the way, are experiencers themselves, either close encounters or even, and this is not just one or two, we've got abductees in our group as well. So they commiserate with the people out there who tell us their stories, which we are actively recording and getting on tape so we can share them. And we're working on this reality television show about the idea of investigating UFOs. Of course, we just call it the UFOI team.
One of the topics that we cover on the show are conspiracies, so that population piece fits nicely into our theme.
Yeah.
Kennedy, do you think Lee Harvey acted alone?
Of course not. Matter of fact, there's many, many JFK assassination aficionados that say that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't act at all. He was not one of the shooters. Matter of fact, you're going to love this, Johnny. Wait till I tell you this. I meet every Sunday morning with a group of JFK assassination aficionados here in Seattle, Washington, and we have actually the last living mafia asset that was there in Dealey Plaza running a safe house for the mob on the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And the information that he is giving us, and he's written a book, anybody can get it, it's called The Men Who Don't Fit In by Rod McKenzie. Rod McKenzie is about 84 years old now and sharp as a tack, and as a young man he was charged with running a safe house in Dallas at the time that the Kennedy thing went down. And he says everybody and their brother showed up in Dealey Plaza that entire week leading up to the assassination because, and he didn't know why, but All the mob guys were showing up from Chicago, from Florida. The CIA was involved. Supposedly they also got the mob involved in trying to kill Castro, so that was a natural that the CIA supposedly was trying to get the mob involved in doing this Kennedy thing. And his information says that there were probably maybe four or five different shooters. Not all of them were used or hit their mark, but they were just not going to let it go. He was not going to let Kennedy get out of Dealey Plaza for some reason. It's a fascinating subject, and I could talk all day on just that one.
If you didn't mind, maybe we will, because I had some questions, comments. I understand that in all of this, didn't the mafia loan Kennedy's dad a bunch of money or pulled strings or something to help him get the presidency, and then he gets the presidency, and they decide to go after the mafia, and they're not returning the favors, so they're like, hey, we helped you out. You're supposed to help us out back, buddy, and you're not, so we're going to have to axe you out of here.
Bingo.
Okay.
Of course, you know, that was one of the major issues of why people believe that Kennedy was outed. The idea that Joseph Kennedy, John Kennedy's father, was made millions in the illegal not narcotics but the illegal booze trade back in the old days.
Yeah.
You know, alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, to be able to make millions, he had to have mob connections and all those things to make it successful. And indeed, when he got, matter of fact, it was the mob in Chicago that put him over the top to beat Nixon. It was such a close race. People don't realize this back then, that Nixon almost won the presidency back in 1961.
Hmm.
But, you know, Kennedy won, and then, of course, the mob is just salivating, going, yes, we got an insider here as the president of the United States. And bingo, his little brother, Robert, starts persecuting the mob. I mean, it was a major deal.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was one of the reasons that I think the CIA got the mob involved. But I don't know if we've got a few minutes here. Let me tell you my bottom line, what I have come up with on why the President of the United States was actually killed. The whole idea of actually killing a President of the United States in the 60s must have been a major decision by someone. It just does not happen without the cooperation of the CIA, the FBI, and all of those players back then, and especially to cover it up this long,
mm-hmm.
of course. But the theory is that the aerospace industry was deeply involved in this whole idea of keeping the alien presence on Earth a secret. Of course, Truman started the MJ-12 organization, which was a group of military and science personnel, to study the idea of what the heck this was that crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. And coincidentally, and that's the same time that the CIA was founded and organized in 1947. So the idea that if they knew this huge secret, the government knew that there were entities on other planets visiting the Earth, they wanted to keep that under wraps at that point. Now, when President Kennedy is elected, one of the things that he does, of course, is start breaking apart the government. I mean, he was so mad at the CIA for pulling off the Bay of Pigs without his authority
mm-hmm.
and botching the whole thing that he says he's going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. And, of course, the CIA is not going to let that happen if they can help it. And, of course, the whole idea of finding out what the heck this happened in Roswell, Kennedy was keenly involved in trying to find out what the presence or what the issue of these presence of aliens were. As a matter of fact, he started to open up the idea of dealing with Russia in a joint space program. And we were actually going to go to the moon with the Russians together. So at one point, the CIA, along with the aerospace folks, said, we can't let this happen. And, of course, there's this famous memo from the MJ-12 organization that talks about Lancer inquiring into our affairs and the situation must be wet. Code kind of talking to the other members of MJ-12. And it wasn't shortly thereafter that, probably a month or so from that memo, that they actually killed Kennedy, which, by the way, was supposed to happen in Chicago a couple months earlier than that. And then it was supposed to happen in Florida, and, of course, finally in Dallas, Texas, where LBJ, you know, is from, the vice president at that time, and LBJ had massive ties to Houston and NASA. They were calling him, when he was the senator, they called him Senator NASA because he was so pro space. And of course, that's why JPL and all those kind of guys, are kind of that's why LBJ was so involved with those folks.
In Texas, wasn't former President Bush the head of, the head of the Secret Service or head of the CIA or something at that time, and he was there in Texas when he got shot?
There's not a whole lot of folks that know that detail, that President Bush, who became President Bush later, this is Bush Sr., was photographed in Dealey Plaza on that day that Kennedy was shot. Now, he was not the director of the CIA at that point. This happened later on in his career, that he was appointed to the office of director. But and there's also rumors out there that George Bush Jr. was a young person in the crowd as well, along with his father. And of course, if all the aficionados will tell you that Nixon was there in Dealey Plaza and there for the Pepsi-Cola convention, supposedly, but met with some of the shady characters that were potentially involved in the Kennedy assassination. It's all tied together, and of course, you got to realize that J. Edgar Hoover was the next-door neighbor to LBJ and actually was charged with kind of keeping the lid on things after it was all over.
Man. You know, oh, yeah. I could see, like, back then, I could see all these different groups that have this common enemy in President Kennedy coming together, even if they have beefs, they, you know, like, we're not going to, you know, mess with each other because we got to solve this problem. Let's solve it together. We all have this common enemy. What do we do? And then
yes.
Throwing out all there, you have one group saying, well, let's just off him. Okay, well, let's just do this. And then they work together, and man.
Matter of fact, Rod McKenzie, this last living mob asset that I meet with on Sunday mornings, he says that when he was running the safe house, there were these Corsican guys from France that showed up, and they were expert sharpshooters. He mentions, you know, the fact that these guys, he didn't know why the heck they were there. They weren't necessarily U.S. mob, but they were mob from France. So there's all sorts of connections that point to the fact that there was a group of people, maybe even a worldwide kind of organization that was behind this entire event to get rid of Kennedy.
What about his brother? Was it Sirhan Sirhan only, or do you have any, you know, ideas on that?
Oh, no. You know, the forensics on that say that there were multiple, maybe even 20 bullets found in that back kitchen area where Robert Kennedy was shot.
Mm-hmm.
Sirhan is still alive, by the way, and he claims he doesn't remember a thing of what happens.
How do you not remember?
Well, it's easy to think that if indeed the guy was either MK Ultra'd or he was drugged himself. You know, the patsy. You got to take care of the patsy. So whenever or whatever happens, if he doesn't die during the event, he's not going to know anything. So that's very possible that it happened to him. There is an interesting photograph that was taken by a young photographer that was at the event. He wasn't a news photographer. He was a young guy with a camera who jumped on top of a table and took a bunch of photos as Kennedy was walking by back in the kitchen area there. And he swears He's still alive himself. He swears there were multiple gunshots from different areas that came into the fray there. He will testify today that there's just Sirhan, this one busboy guy, was not the guy who actually shot at all. Fascinating subject, and it's just scary to think that they can do these kinds of things, whoever they are, with impunity.
Yeah. I've had requests to do a conspiracy conference, like a conspiracy summit.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm wondering if that would be something that maybe your group would want to be involved in, something like that.
Oh, they would, Johnny. There is a member of our UFO I team who is basically one of the world's experts on the JFK assassination. His name is Brian Snoddy. That's Snoddy. And you can find his YouTube seminars on the JFK assassination all over the place. He was one of the most knowledgeable, detail-oriented researchers out there, and he would love to be able to show up at, in an investigation kind of conspiracy theory convention, I'm sure, along with a whole lot of other folks that we have in the local area. And we've got Jim Fetzer, who is involved in this whole idea of conspiracies, as well. And he doesn't just do the JFK assassination. There's Sandy Hook, there's 9/11, there's all sorts of interesting people that are now finally getting the mileage that they deserve after all these years, when people are starting to realize, hey, they haven't told us everything.
So, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. Being the paranormal lawyer here, you came to the right guy. We'll be able to hook you up.
Perfect. Well, how do I contact the UFO I team, contact you, find out more?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking. You can always find the UFO I team, which is a lowercase I, by the way, if you're punching into YouTube or Facebook. Find a notification every time we go live with our weekly meetings that we do televised as we go. And of course, there's lots of archived material up on the UFO I team Facebook page as well. And if they want to find us on our website, they can go to UFOIT.com.
Thank you for taking the time to be on Strange Harbor once again, sir.
My pleasure, Johnny. Thank you for having me.
Questions, comments, listen to our archived show, all that and more, log on to StrangeHarbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at StrangeHarbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.